Well, there's a few things happening over the course of this first week of May, and I'll get onto those in a minute. And amongst them, two key central bank meetings. One is the Federal Reserve in the United States, and the other, of course, is the RBA meeting here through the course of this week. And both of them at this stage are expected to lift interest rates rather more in the case of the Fed. But just going back over some of the data we've had in the US over the course of this past week, and I'll get on to Australia in a minute, but out of the United States, the story in the US is that we've got plenty of fear that you're going to get the economy slowing down, and particularly those areas of the economy which are susceptible to higher interest rates. But we still haven't got a lot of evidence that that's occurring in the past data yet. And this is quite typical of when we start to get monetary policy tightening phases. It's well worth keeping in mind that in just about every single monetary policy tightening phase that we've had over the last century, that basically that first part of the monetary policy tightening cycle tends to coincide with continuing strong economic growth. It takes time before those interest rates really start to batten down on economic growth. This time around, the market is getting well ahead of itself. In some ways, it's starting to fear that we're going to see something happening a lot quicker than has ever happened in the past. I'm doubtful of that because, as I say, there's still a lot of momentum running through these economic numbers. And just to give some examples of that, over the course of the past week, we had, for example, April consumer confidence came out. It held up at 107.3, where the preliminary reading was at 107.6. So, yeah, that's pretty firm. And its consumer confidence has actually lifted a little bit over the course of the last couple of months. The Michigan Consumer Sentiment Survey, not quite as strong as that, but it wasn't much of a downward revision in the late data. So we got 65.2 from 65.7. So not too bad. We had readings of March personal income, personal spending came out. Personal income was up by 0.5%, more than expected, after a 0.7% rise the month before. And personal spending in March accelerated to 1.1%, about double what the market was expecting, from plus 0.6%. We had the Q1 GDP, the preliminary reading of Q1 GDP in the United States. There was a reaction after the very strong reading we had going back the quarter before. Going back to Q4, annualized GDP rose by 6.9%. In Q1, it was weak. It fell by 1.4%. But inside that, the moving part was largely the trade account. It's the international trade account, which the price of those imports and the volumes of those imports, that's what really did a lot of the damage in terms of economic growth coming back. When we look at some of the key components, for example, real consumer spending inside that GDP reading, it was actually firmer than where it was going back to Q4. It was up 2.7%, whereas going back to Q4 is at 2.5. So this is some of the ebb and flow you get when you get a very strong number and a give back the following quarter. We'll probably get a stronger number again when we get through to Q2. So that's the way in which those numbers tend to bounce around as we go through. Just one or two other numbers which are worth looking at. Although it's an old number, house prices in the United States, hugely strong. This is a February reading, admittedly, for the Case-Shiller House Price Index. The market thought they'd get a 1.5% rise month on month. We got 2.4% rise month on month. As a result of that, house prices across the United States actually accelerated further to 22.2%, up from 18.9% going back the month before. So considerable strength running through those. This week in the US, obviously the FOMC meeting coming up on Wednesday is the key event. And they've been softening the market, and the market expects that there will be a bigger interest rate hike from the Fed this time around. Their first interest rate move was only 25 basis points going back to the March meeting. And this was in a country which demonstrably has, of the advanced economies, the highest inflation rate amongst those advanced economies at 8.5%. It also demonstrably has more contribution to that high inflation rate from domestic factors rather than international factors. It is the one major economy where you can definitely say that the labour market is overheating, given the way in which wages are growing. And most recently, in a strongly growing economy, they added more fuel to the fire with that massive infrastructure program that was announced by the president. So it was adding more fuel to the fire. So, you know, the Fed's a long way behind in terms of getting on top of the inflation problem. So it's not surprising that it's starting to say, look, we've just got to do things a bit faster. And as a result of that, the market is not only building in aggressive 50 basis point rate hike this week, which would take the funds rate from 0.5% to 1%, but it's also looking for repeat of this time and time again over the course of the next few months. That may not turn out to be the case, because one of the quirks in this, although the US has got a great inflation problem relative to the rest of the world, the higher inflation goes and the quicker it goes in the near term, the stronger the base effects are when you get past the peak. And we are almost certainly past the peak for US inflation with the March-April readings. In March, we're at 8.5% year on year. Some of those factors are not going to be rising at anything like the pace they did running through that drove us up to this peak. And so as they fall away, yes, there'll be some other factors which will still be inflating in the US, but the US inflation rate's actually going to be moderating month in, month out over the remainder of this year, simply on base effects. And that, for a Fed, gives it the opportunity to run slower at some point than the market's currently anticipating. So there are going to be some quirks in this story. For the time being, the market's getting in a lather about how rapidly and quickly the Fed will go, and in some ways that will be, you know, reinforced probably with the rate hike that we get this week. But if anything, we've got a hell of a lot of volatility beyond, because there's some surprises, not all of them bad, as we get a bit further down the track. Some of the other data which will get lost in the wash this week, we get the usual ISM services sector and manufacturing sector readings coming out. These are still looking pretty strong. The ISM manufacturing PMI comes out tonight and is still in high 50 territory. So it was 57.1 going back to March. Looks as if that'll accelerate to 57.6. In any other cycle, that would be looked on as being a very, very strong reading. And similarly so, the ISM services sector PMI, services account for close to 90% of the US economy. And that is likely to rise, the market thinks, to 58.5 from 58.3. Again, another strong reading. The other readings, which are relentlessly strong at the moment, anything to do with the labour market. The weekly initial jobless claims have been below 200,000 now for a few weeks. They were only 180,000 last week. Market thinks that'll be down that level again. And we get the non-farm payrolls, the unemployment rate coming out right at the end of the week on Friday. And out in the United States, it looks as if average hourly earnings will be up another 0.4% month on month. That may just cap off the rise in wages at this point. So it'll, but still very, very high at 5.5% from 5.6% year on year, going back the month before, if that's where it comes in. Non-farm payrolls still running ahead. Going back last month, they were up 431,000. The market thinks they'll be up another 400,000 for the month of April. And as a result of that, the unemployment rate gets down to 3.5% probably in the United States from 3.6. Yeah, this is the point about the United States. It's the one major economy around the world which, you know, clearly has the labour market overheating at this point. And yeah, that has to be tamed, because if you have wages which could persistently run at above 5%, it's going to be very hard for the Fed to get its inflation target back down to 2%. And what I should say about my earlier comments are, whilst the Fed has a chance to move at a slower pace over the next 12 months, go 12 months down the track, and you get this more persistent inflation coming through, then the process has to accelerate again. So it does look as if it's going to be a sort of very, very extended lift in interest rates that we see by the Fed over the course of the next year or two. Moving to China, And China's obviously having one hell of a problem getting on top of its Omicron outbreak. This is starting to impact economic readings. Last week, there was a bit of a relieving announcement from President Xi that they're going to be spending up big to try and get the economy to move. But of course, in the very near term, it's the shutdowns which are causing the problem in China. And we can see it there in their purchasing managers' reports that came out over the weekend. 50 is the expansion contraction point for these surveys, and they're all way back in the 40s now, as far as China's concerned, which points to further slowing in economic activity. So we had the annual official manufacturing PMI. That came down to 47.4 from 49.5. The non-manufacturing PMI, the services part of that, came down to 41.9. That's a very low reading, down from 48.4. Not surprising, given that people were locked in Shanghai, and you know that threat was there for Beijing as well. And the cakes in manufacturing PMI, which is looked on as being the more reliable indicator, that came down to 46 from 48.1. We've only got one more. We've got a lot of holidays in China this week, so it's their spring holidays. We only get one more. The cakes in services sector PMI for April comes out on Thursday, but basically China's on holiday this week, although they won't be able to do much with it in some places because they're locked down. In Australia this week, Australia last week, you know, obviously the big news was the CPI and the inflation rate. It was higher than expected, and the CPI rose. The market thought that the CPI would rise 1.7% quarter on quarter. It rose 2.1%. As a result of that, the annual inflation rate has accelerated to 5.1% year on year from 3.5%. And the TRIM mean, which is the Reserve Bank's preferred underlying inflation measure, that was also higher than expected too. It was at 1.4%. It was expected to be 1.2, and there was an acceleration to 3.7% from 2.6%. The damage, much of it was in transport. It was things like petrol prices up over 10%. It was grocery prices which did a lot of the damage, and of course housing rents in particular, which was starting to drive through the CPI and lift it. But most items were rising. Major categories were rising at over 1% quarter on quarter. So there is a fair bit of inflation pressure running through as far as Australia is concerned. And we can see it with some of the other readings that came out later in the week. So some of them are good for Australia. So, for example, the day after the CPI, we had our international prices came out, and export prices in Q1 lifted quarter on quarter by 18%. After lifting 3.5% quarter on quarter, going back the quarter before. They're now up 48% year on year, export prices for Australia. That was in Q1. So, yeah, that in some ways is a backhanded positive in that. But we also had very high import price rises too. So import prices rose by 5.1% month on month, quarter on quarter, after being up 5.8% the previous quarter, up 19-odd% year on year. We also had our producer prices came out. Our Q1 producer prices rose by 1.6%. That increased the annual rate of change in producer prices to 4.9% from 3.7%. Now, producer price inflation is a lot less than it is in many other countries overseas, so it's one mitigating factor that may suggest that things may moderate a bit. But the pressure is right on the Reserve Bank moving into this week. And the reason for it is that come the end of this week, they produce their next quarterly monetary policy statement. They'll have to revise higher again their inflation forecast, and it'll have inflation above the top end of the range for the foreseeable future. So that's where we're going to need to see an interest rate rise from the Reserve Bank this week. They could conceivably wait for the wage price index to come out, but that will make life difficult. It sort of means that why wait for something which proves that you've still got a problem, another month. So that's where, even though we're in the middle of an election campaign, we should expect to see the RBA lift rates this week. What do they do? Do they do just 15 basis points to 25 basis points? That's what most of the market's expecting. I wouldn't rule out at all that they might do 40 and go straight to 50 basis points for the cash rate this week. It will make more sense. They've got a fair bit of work to do just to get interest rates to some sort of level which is realistic in this type of environment. They don't have to go as far as the Fed, but we've had a 0.1% cash rate for way too long, and that's part of the reason why we've got the problem we've got now. In terms of some of the other economic readings, we've also got March retail sales come out this week. They're expected to lift about 0.5% after being up 1.8% the month before. Today we've got ANZ job ads. They're still rising pretty strongly on a month-to-month basis. On Wednesday, we'll get March home building approvals coming out, and that one will be interesting because the month before we had an outrageously high 43.5% lift in home building approvals in 1 month. So obviously we're going to have some order of give back on that, and the market's expectation on that is about minus 12%. In terms of Europe, the interesting part in Europe, I think, is that we're still seeing reasonable economic growth. Middle of the data we had out last week predates some of the problems that obviously have been there in Ukraine. But Q1 GDP for the EU area was actually up 0.2%. And as a result of that, the annual rate of change year on year in GDP growth in Europe lifted to 5% from 4.7%. So still running not too badly. Obviously, there's still a lot of issues in Europe related to the way in which they deal with the issues in Ukraine, and we are watching what happens pretty closely out of Ukraine moving over the course of this next week or so. At the moment, the Russians are finding it very, very difficult to make ground in the areas that they want, let alone to move further into Ukraine itself. And that's a bit of a restraining factor, but we do have some interesting celebrations coming up in Russia, not this week, but the following week, 9th of May, is expected to be a major announcement from Putin about what he does next. It coincides with their major celebrations they have in Russia relating to when they mark the end of World War II. So the May 9th celebrations are always very, very large there. So waiting to see what may come out next week. But as far as data is concerned this week, there's a fair bit of it, but some of the more interesting ones, you can see the price pressure in Europe from their producer prices. We get their March producer price index comes out on Tuesday, and it's expected to lift to 36.2% year-on-year from 31.4% year-on-year. This is chock full of the additions to energy prices. Compare and contrast that with ours, which is running with a 3 on the front of it rather than the 30-something on the front of it. Massively larger pipeline inflation pressure there in Europe. But the central banks sideline because there's greater risk to economic growth running in Europe than there is most other places because of the war. They'll also have their March unemployment rate. It's expected to come down to a new 20-year low, 6.7% from 6.8%. And we'll also get their manufacturing and services sector PMIs, which is still holding up, rather like the US. And this is something that is well worth bearing in mind, that we get this volatility that runs through financial markets, but past economic numbers are holding up quite well. And the PMI readings in Europe, going back to March, were 55.3 for the manufacturing PMI and 57.7 for the services sector PMI. They're expected to hold, if not better, those levels for the month of April. So they're still pointing to reasonably good reasonably strong economic activity for the time being. So great mixture of things happening at the moment. But the big things to watch this week are the central banks. The Fed is a key one. It's the central bank which is most behind in terms of dealing with the inflation problem that they're facing. And, of course, the Reserve Bank here, which has run out of room to be patient and has to make a move this time because of what we saw with the very, very high CPI reading relative to, you know, Australian experience that came out last week.